ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I owe you an apology. I didn't put an episode out last week, and that was because I was struggling with the holidays going on and everything else going on, and I thought it might be best just to skip last week. This week, I have Ben on from Challenger Sports. We sit down and talk about the programs they offer. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Ben Sansom. I currently work with Challenger Sports and a local soccer club called Capel FC. Been in the US since 2016, having moved over from Australia on a visa, coaching soccer in the New England region. In 2019, I moved over here to Dallas and proceeded to do camps and coaching across all of North Texas.
Awesome. So I have you here today talking about Challenger Sports. So what is Challenger Sports and how do they relate to soccer?
So in a nutshell, Challenger Sports is one of the largest providers of soccer camps, academies, skill programs, and services across North America. Top and bottom, basically our role here in North Texas is to help you guys grow the game at a recreational level. We start as young as 2 years old. We go all the way up to 18 years of age.
So with starting at 2 years old, that must be a challenge. So is it more of a parent-involved sessions, or is it strictly coaches and players, or is the groups really small?
It's a little bit of both, a little bit of all three, if I'm honest. So obviously we've got our what's called Tiny Tykes. It's for 2 to 3 year olds and 4 to 5 year olds. Typically it's a very flexible session. We try and keep it one coach to 10 kids. If it goes over that, we throw on a second coach and we do help out. We encourage parent involvement as much as possible at this age group because A, it helps us, and B, it's a good relationship builder between sort of the understanding of soccer and recreational soccer as well, especially at that young age. I will say it's the best way to wake up in the morning on a Saturday morning, straight after your coffee. Having done it now for, almost 10 years, the Tiny Tykes piece, I still get back out there and do it every Saturday morning. You can find me on a field somewhere in North Texas coaching 2 to 3 year olds.
That's crazy. That's a hard age group. I know when I coached my daughter, she was about 3 when I started coaching her, 3 and a half, I think it was. And it is herding cats. It's how I was always described coaching soccer was. And I still feel watching them play, unless they have a great coach, it's herding cats until they learn formation.
It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. And I know the coaches we bring on board, I train them specifically. And I try to make sure that they have the right resources and the right access to additional training if they need it. If the odd parent gives me a call and says, "Hey, Ben, what's going on?" I'm typically the first one on the ground.
Awesome. So as you progress through the age groups, you do camps and academies type stuff with the younger age groups. I'll say 2 to 5, it's more of the flexible style parent and coach. About 5, 6 years old, does it move to strictly player with a coach? And what's the ratio at that age then?
Yeah, so typically our Tiny Tykes is 2 to 5. We run our creative skills program of ages between 6 to 14. Typically the 6 to 8 year old age group, it's a very fundamental based program where they learn through playing, or they play to learn basically. The parents are less involved. They're still encouraged to come and ask questions from our coaches. I always encourage that. I always say to my coaches, especially boys, girls, parents are going to come stand next to you. They want to learn. They're sending their 6-year-old kid who they're physically coaching, come stand next to my coach. He'll deliver the session. If you have any questions, ask him.
Awesome. So this type of setting that you're talking about right now, this is not a camp. This is more of Saturday type program that is available. Do they scrimmage in these programs? Do you have enough kids where it's like a scrimmage, or is it just small skill sets, small set groups working on skills?
Yeah. So our creative skills program, as I said, 6 to 14 year olds, typically it's a supplemental training to whatever the kid is doing right now. So if they're playing at a recreational team on Saturdays, they typically have one practice on a Wednesday night. We set up a skills program with the soccer association, and we invite kids to come join in, have an additional practice. At these practices, we have an inflatable field, which I call the zone, and it's typically 3v3. They're encouraged to think creatively, not so much work on techniques, but rather skills. And the big difference that I talk to parents about is technique versus skill. What is a technique and what is a skill? This is big difference from the old Next Level Skills program. It's creative skills. The creative skills, obviously, the decision-making behind the technique. So we're not so much teaching how to pass a ball. We're teaching the why. Why are you passing a ball? Why are you shooting? Why are you taking that player on? Can you be creative in the way that you think on the field?
Right. Now, with that being said, are you looking at, this is more along the lines of, you call it supplemental coaching. So this is going to one of these private coaches where they have small group sessions and working with individuals then. And then do you all build upon that with the program and go forward as they progress? And do you have multiple level of coaching? Because to be honest, when you're working with a skills coach will teach you everything they know, then eventually it becomes stagnant. Nothing against skills coaches, it's you just have to have a variance with it. And as a parent now in this world for about 5 years, you can become stagnant with a coach. And it's nothing against them. It's just a coach can only offer so much knowledge before they've offered you everything they have on the private level. So how do you circumvent those issues, or how do you work with those problems? Do you have multiple coaches that come in and work with the players, or is it a more of a, you work with this coach for so many weeks, then you, like, it's like a cycle and you work with through different things?
Yeah, so we have a set curriculum focused around dribbling, passing, shoot, ball striking, shooting and finishing, and then 1v1s, 1v1 attacking and defending. And then obviously the last 6 weeks, in a 6-week program, they would do a 3v3 tournament at the end where we'd split them off into teams, multiple fields going in at one go. In terms of levels, we rotate them. So they're only with a coach for about 10, 15 minutes. So they're getting different coaches at different times, understanding that the game is fluid. So they're going to be in these creative skills programs. It's a very much a games-based approach to learning, allowing the game to be the teacher. And as they go in, the game being fluid, they're first faced with different problems. They've got to find different ways to solve it. Now, it's all well and good doing zigzags in and out of a cone, but as anyone who's played the game before will tell you, that's great for technique, but when you get to games, you're not dribbling in and out of cones anymore. You've got to focus on, as a coach, as a player, I'm playing against other players who are going to do things differently. A left-footed player is going to defend differently to a right-footed player, and a right-footed striker is going to play differently to a left-footed player, or left-footed striker, I should say. So that's why we've switched over from a technique sort of approach to a games-based approach. It allows the game to really be the teacher. I know I keep saying that, and it's a little cue line. It sounds funky, but what it is, the kids learn through playing, the kids learn through doing, and they're faced with different problems on how to use their techniques rather than progressing through cones, progressing through juggling, progressing through whatever it may be. So they can learn at their own pace, or they can not learn at their own pace, if that makes sense. But it's, and each player is obviously going to be different.
You say it's, you're talking about game as the teacher. Here in the States, we don't have street soccer like a lot of countries do, and where they just naturally learn through the game. I was told recently, you don't learn scissors in your club practices in Brazil. You learn them by playing street soccer. It's not something the clubs are working on. They aren't teaching you to do certain skill sets in Brazil. They're teaching you to technique at a young age, and not, or tactics, I should rephrase that, not personal techniques. And it's more focused on the actual game and the way where, like the example I was given, do you think Neymar learned to do scissors, or Ronaldo learned to do scissors, or Messi learned to do scissors in practice? Or do you think they saw someone do it, and so they tried it when they were playing in the streets somewhere, or playing for fun somewhere, and honing in their skills there? And I'm like, that's just like in basketball here in the States. Kids will sit down and play basketball, and they'll do all these fancy moves while they're playing pickup ball somewhere. And then they'll go, when they go to high school and they play in their school, they'll actually use those skill sets in the game, actual game they're playing in high school. And it's, people forget, I feel, that here in the U.S. that soccer is not played like the rest of the world is played. It's very structured.
Yeah, and that's typically the whole idea of what our creative skills is trying to do. If you think about our creative skills camps coming up in 2025, we're going to have a street performer, a guy from Europe who's a professional street soccer player, and he goes in. I'm sure you've seen him on Facebook, YouTube, whatever. The guy who does a million round the worlds or whatever, juggling competition. He's going to be there, show the kids, like, I learned this playing on the street in Poland, basically. And now we encourage that in our 3v3, the inflatable fields. Go into these inflatable fields. Well, can you do, you know, a panner? Can you do a double scissor? Can you do a step over? But it's not a coach standing there and going, all right, guys, this is how we do it. This is how we do it. This is how I do it. Show me how you do it on a field. Because as you alluded to, it's very, growing up, it would be, let's throw down our backpacks or shoes or jumpers, hoodies for goalposts and play. And that's how, typically that's how we want sort of these creative skills programs and our creative skills camps to run. Essentially, not much equipment, lots of decision making, basically a goal at one end, a goal at the other, let's play.
Yeah, we don't have that much that often anymore. It's funny, you have practice with kids. My son's notorious for this. They'll have practice and they'll set up a hodgepodge field with their backpacks they bring to practice after practice is done to make a small-sided field. But you don't have kids just throwing their book bags in the hallway when they get in the house and running back out the door to go play soccer in the street. So now you're trying to incorporate that into your programs. So are these programs you have every week, is it like a set schedule, or is it a come as you please, especially when these skills type clinics that you have set up?
So typically we offer 6 to 8 week programs with different recreational associations. They are a set night. Now, obviously, as anyone, we are at the mercy of the local councils when it comes to the fields. So obviously one issue we have constantly is reseeding. So whenever we do have to try and work our schedule around that. But typically it's a set schedule, 6 to 8 weeks, entirely up to the person. We charge roughly $12 a week, but it is a 6 week or 8 week commitment. So obviously when we work with these recreational associations, we do offer the rebate or the kickback option as well, incorporated into that price point. But yeah, typically it's typically the only real thing that's set up is it's a Tuesday night. It's 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. for the 6 to 9 year olds, 7:15 to 8:15 to the 10 to 14 year olds. Obviously we don't pigeonhole by age. I do need to stress that, because I do get a lot of emails, calls from parents saying my 9 year old is actually really, really good playing select soccer. Could they get a bit more of a challenge? Absolutely. We'll push them up an age group into the 10 year olds, see how they go. Worst case scenario is they may not be as successful at that 10 year old, so we can just drop them back down to the 9 years old. It's no stress to the parent, it's no added stress to us. Obviously it is a bit of a tough conversation, but that's part and parcel of the role. We do have to have those tough conversations.
Come on, little Johnny, little Susie's always the best player.
Exactly.
I'm biased, I get it. Like my son, I will always say he's above average for his age group, but that's a whole nother topic. But that's the thing, like when parents come to you saying, my kid does this, do you see it more based on the location where they're able to jump into those older age groups and be successful? Looking at it from a parent perspective, is on the west side of town, I'm in Keller area, and soccer is not as strong as it is on the east side of town. And so you do have players on this side of town that tend to be above their age group when they're playing and can go fit when you're up and play just fine. But if you move them to the east side of town, the player pool is completely different. Do you see that as you're working in the communities here, or to give parents a general idea of what?
Being honest, not really. It doesn't really vary from location to location. What we do find is the level of parent perspective changes from location to location. The quality of play is not any different. Obviously, we work with a lot of recreational associations, but we do get the odd parent who does ask us, hey, can you challenge my kid? My kid's up here. And then we put them on the field and the kid does need maybe a little bit more guidance. So again, that's what we're here for. As we're not here to lie to parents. We're not here to lie to kids. We're not going to be that person who's like, yeah, your kid's brilliant, when really they do need a little bit of an extra help with their techniques, or maybe they're not achieving their skills or their decision-making as much as we like. So we can give them a bit more attention with a younger age group, because we're focusing on techniques versus skills. We're not focusing on skills versus techniques, because in my opinion, a 13-year-old boy or girl, I should say, should have a decent technique, if they're playing even at a recreational level, they should have a good understanding. But as we get younger and younger and younger, those techniques do need to be more solid. So you do need to focus on them. And I do, as I said, within these creative skills camp programs, I do say to my coaches, hey guys, if you see someone that needs a little bit of extra guidance, spend that extra 30 seconds correcting that technique. Whilst we're still focusing on decision making, we still want to come back in and make sure the kid's getting the right, getting what they need, is basically what I'm trying to say. Each kid will be different. They'll have a different learning pathway. Some will be here, some will be here, some will be here, some will be here. And it's our job as coaches to try and help that, especially with challenge sports when we have British coaches, Australian coaches, Brazilian coaches. They all coach a little bit differently and they all have different expectations. Just like all parents are going to have different expectations. Our job is to go in and make sure they get what they need.
So I'm going to circle back really quickly, make sure I caught this. Majority of your target audience is the rec level associations than the select club level.
Correct, yeah. We do get the odd player who comes in and they're from a select level, and we do obviously have the capabilities of looking after them. I obviously don't want to pigeonhole us and say we're just recreational, blah, 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 that's it. We do work with some individual select players, which is nice. They do come to our camps. They have a great time. But a lot of the people we work with, a lot of the kids we work with at the weekly programs are of a recreational level, because we do focus heavily on working with the local association to grow their association.
Gotcha. Now, looking at this from a different angle, is do you actually partner then with the rec organization so you can use their facilities, or do you have your own facilities already lined up and go that avenue?
Typically, honestly, I'd love to have all the money in the world and have my own facility so we could run these programs in our own facility. But at the end of the day, we don't. We run specifically we partner with the organizations. We ask them to put aside half a field for us, half a 9v9 field for us. Typically, that's not an issue. And then we deliver the programs at their fields, so that way everyone can see what's going on, everyone can see what's happening, see how much fun these kids are having. And that's how we do that. So we do partner with the local association. We borrow their facility. If there's an additional fee, we're happy to pay for that. As I said, it's all about what the recreational association wants.
So you work with Tangent, which is great, because I feel, as a parent watching this, the beautiful game that we're all enjoying and doing everything that we're doing, you're seeing these rec organizations having players, I feel, stolen from them, because parents' ideology of a great soccer player must be playing with a club or an academy here in North Texas, where their skill set might be better off in a rec level until they have the correct skill sets to move on. So you are pretty much coexist with the association so their players can get to the level their parents hope they'll get to, or the players' dreams may be to play at a higher level, maybe within a club or just higher level inside of a rec organization.
Correct, yeah. So our typical role would be we used to have the program labeled as a next level skills program. What we were finding with that was next level does cater to that, does sound like it caters to that select level player, but we want to make sure that parents, players know that we have the ability to cater for all abilities. We do work with predominantly recreational associations to help take their player wherever they want to go, whether it be they just want to have some more fun with a couple of friends, or they actually want to challenge themselves and get to the next level. Our program does allow for that. Obviously, we've got the zone, as I alluded to. It's a magnet. People see it. They want to play in it. And that's what we want to do. We want to have these kids fall in love with the game. We live in a society, especially in North Texas, where soccer is not the number one sport, let's be honest here. But you and I both want it to be the number one sport. We don't want the kids playing in my opinion, we don't want multi-sport athletes are great, but when it gets to a certain age group, that 14-year-old age group, they're going to have to choose, which is the sad part about it. It shouldn't be that way. But with this, with soccer becoming a lower and lower age group, age specification sport, it's kids are going to have to choose at some point. So when we work with our program at the Creative Skills Program at a recreational association, we're really just trying to make these kids fall in love with it through playing, through gathering knowledge. That way they can go back and let's say they play middle school soccer, they've got a base to jump, a launch pad to jump off and really enjoy themselves. Eventually, hopefully, play high school soccer or potentially play ECNL or join the alphabet soup of North Texas, if you will. Obviously, we don't encourage that. I want to stress to everyone listening, obviously, Challenger Sports is not here to steal players. We're here to help grow your recreational association. Keep them. We want your association to go from 500 kids to 1,000 kids through having supplemental skills training, the tiny types, which helps grow that younger age group, whatever it may be.
No, I get what you're saying. I honestly feel too many kids are making the jump from rec to club, and I really believe many kids need to be playing in rec longer, watching the game, because the skill sets they're learning is beyond them, and it's just, I'm not going to bash clubs, but it is the whole point of the rec side of the game, the grassroots, whatever you want to call it, depending on where you're from in the world. It is where they learn to love the game and to have that lifelong love. And I feel what you're trying to do is not just make rec more competitive, but also give them a fighting chance to be competitive with clubs, because at the end of the day, the stronger the players are, the more competitive the rec organizations can be, the more talent they'll have to move forward. I can't remember what U.S. women's national team player was, but they never played club soccer. And someone just crushed every little club, every large club, every small club, medium-sized clubs, saying you have to do this to make it to the national team. No, you don't. You can go these other routes. And from the sounds of it, you are supporting that pathway of the sport and look at it differently. So let's move out a little bit, the younger age groups. Let's move to, let's say, 8 to 12-year-olds and let's start gradually going through the age groups, what you are all doing with them. And tell me what you do with these next set of age groups of players.
Yeah, so typically our programs are split 6 to 9-year-olds, obviously, and then they're split 10 to 14-year-olds. So obviously with the 10 to 14-year-olds, it is a little bit more in-depth with our curriculum. Our coaches focus more heavily on, as I mentioned, the skill set, the creative skills, the decision-making behind the technique. So we're really asking the kids why. It's one of my favorite cue words as a coach. When I ask a question, the kid typically goes yes or no, and I go, why? What? Why are you thinking that way? And that's the big part with the 10 to 14-year-olds. Why are you doing it? Why have you played that pass? Why have you had that shot? Why have you decided to take this player on? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's something I try to enforce with my coaches that I bring in is, guys, we're here to talk about the why with these 10 to 14-year-olds. The big difference being, yes, they're playing games a lot more. Yes, they're scrimmaging a lot more. But as I've said right from the start, we're playing to learn, not learning to play. And that's a big thing that at the recreational level, and again, I see it. We got a lot of people dribbling in and out of cones, but what are we doing actually on the field? I see a lot of coaches getting in the middle of their scrimmages. They're standing in the center circle trying to be a referee. Well, on Saturdays, you're not going to be a referee. You have to try and sit down or stand to the side. And I always question how much when we yell or when we talk to a player, how much are they actually hearing you? They're on the far side of the field. Your voice gets caught in the wind. It's North Texas. It's naturally windy. Especially with the 10 to 14-year-old age group, we let them go a bit more. We try and limit how much actual coaching we're doing, and we try and let them focus on, okay, I'm in this situation. What should I do and why?
That's a completely different approach that you normally get then.
Like I said, you go.
No, like you're going, it's a different approach. Most of the time, I just wrote it out. You aren't playing to learn. I said it wrong. You aren't learning to play. You're playing to learn. And it's not an approach that is very common. It's becoming more and more common as time goes on because we're starting to learn the street. As Americans, I need to specify that. We're learning the street soccer model of the game and the importance of it. And it's not like school, so to speak. The tactics side of the game is, but you still have to learn by doing. And we are very much, here's your textbooks, learn how to memorize this information to go take your test. And soccer is, no, let's go try this hands-on to memorize it, the go take your test, which is the game. Whatever week it may be, or whatever the game may be that week, if it's a scrimmage, or if it's a in practice, or if it's a league game or a rec game, whatever you may have lined up.
Yeah, and I noticed at the select level a lot more coaches sitting down. There's a lot less screaming, but even then it's the same thing. We still have to stand up. We still have to project ourselves. We still have to get our message across. At the recreational level, most of the time, it's mum or dad is coaching their player. What I would love to see, and I would challenge all recreational parents to do this, is as a coach, can you just sit down and just watch? Enjoy the fact that your kid's 13, 14 years of age and actually playing this sport. It doesn't matter what we're doing. And as coaches, when we run our programs, I do say to my coaches, you do still have to coach. But again, it's how you're coaching. Are you overcoaching? Are you screaming? Are you yelling? Try, if you have to speak, stop everybody together and speak. Don't just scream it out loud. We have to make sure that if there's a message to get across, how are you getting it across? How are you getting it across? Make sure it's the right message with the smallest amount of words possible. And obviously, if there's a lack of understanding, then we're going to go in there and go, okay, how else can I help? How else can I explain this? Like I said, with our programs, the 10 to 14 year old is more of the why. I feel like that's the biggest thing we don't ask. I learned that back in a coaching license back in Australia. And I've never thought, I've been coaching for 2-3 years at that point in time. I had a little group of U9 boys and no one had ever, I'd never said the word, okay, why? Why have you made that pass? And it changed my whole perspective on how I coach. And like I said, that's why I love the creative skills camps. I didn't create them. Somebody else did. I'll take that. I'll say that. But the creative skills element to it, I love the fact that we now get to ask why as a coach.
I think that question right there, why, it encourages more critical thinking than just giving the answer. Having a young player, my son's 10, and I ask why, or what does that mean, or why are you doing it this way? Explain it, break it down to me. I don't have a soccer background, so maybe it's something he's going to teach me or explain to me in a different avenue than I have read or studied or watched over the last 5 years. And I think parents, like you said, need to take a step back and actually enjoy watching their players play, because you only have so many years. I think right now my son's 10. I have 8 more summers of him playing soccer. And my daughter, who's 6, I have 12. And when you put it in numbers like that, those numbers go by very quickly. And we as parents need to take a step back and enjoy the moment. So as you go through the older age groups, you tend to step back. So let's get to the little bit older age groups. So you said, I'm trying to remember. Did I write it down? I did not. I was writing down other notes. The other older age groups. So how do you break down the next age groups?
So 14 plus, obviously we have 15 years and up. We have a pro division. My knowledge, obviously, on the pro division is very limited. We have partnerships with the Stephen Gerrard Academy. We have partnerships with a high school called Spire, the Spire Academy out of Ohio. Typically with these, they're run during the summer only, because getting a 15, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old to take either a night off practice or a night off school is going to be very, very tough. So typically it's a four-day option, a four-day camp. They get access to a variety of options. So we've got a goalkeeping coach on staff. The coaches are typically have coached at a college level or are currently coaching at a college level. The second part to that is, third part, with our relationship with the Stephen Gerrard Academy, their actual sports psychologist comes over and he delivers their sports psychology piece. So they have a very specific curriculum. So the guy out of the Liverpool FC high performance unit, I'm just trying to think of the name. He comes over and he delivers the sports psychology piece, teaches about time management, balancing schools and stuff like that. And obviously they've got the ability to send, once the kids finish high school, they've got the ability to send the kids to John Moores University over there. The kids will play in the lower levels of the amount of soccer leagues they have there. We have one boy over there at the moment out of Atlanta who is currently the captain of an FA Cup team, under 21 FA Cup team, and I've forgotten his name as well. I can tell you he looks like Sepp Vandenberg, though. If you don't know who Sepp Vandenberg is, he was an ex-Liverpool centre-back. He looks like Sepp Vandenberg, but he came through the pro camp. He went to a pro camp. He was invited to a national college ID combine, and then eventually he was picked up by the Stephen Gerrard Academy and went over there. So obviously with our pro division, the approach with the coaching is much more hands-on. We understand that these kids are now in high school, so we try to provide as much information, as much technical work, really hone in on their creative skills, their decision-making, and really try to set them up to potentially play A, in college, and B, at the anything past college. I understand that in the US, a lot of parents do fall into the trap of thinking that college is the be-all and end-all. With our pro division camps, we try to make sure that they've got a variety of options once they finish high school, be it here in the US or overseas. And that's what, like I said, I understand that college is a very big deal. And I went to college myself, not here. I went to college in Australia. I wish I'd gone to college here. I would have had a great time based on all the movies I've seen.
not the same.
But like I said, college is not the be-all and end-all. And I think as a soccer player, a young soccer player, if there are any kids listening to this, understanding that, yes, GPA is great, but there are other avenues to be famous in this sport. I think Christian Pulisic's a fantastic example. He never went to college in the US. He did college online. I know that for a fact. He did college online, but he went off and played in Europe. But he understood, again, understanding that attending our pro division camps, we're going to help you the whole way through. We're going to provide you with the right training to prepare you for your next level, whatever it may be.
I think that's important because most people don't realize, most parents think you have to go to college. And I think making that jump is very hard too. And I this is where it's a whole sidebar we could have about players that make it even to college or even making it pro. They always say it's about 1%, less than 1%. I say it's probably about 0.5% of players make it to the pro level. And here in the United States, and I always ask, let's break that number down a little bit more. How many of these kids are soccer fanatics? And what I mean by fanatics, they eat, live, and breathe soccer. Every moment they have a ball at their foot. They have, if they have a chance to go play 1v1 with someone, they're going to take it. If they have a chance to go jump, if they're 14 years old and they have a chance to go play soccer and it's a bunch of 8-year-olds, they're not going to turn their nose up at it. They're going to go and play with a bunch of 8-year-olds just so they can play soccer. Or if they are 10 and they're watching a bunch of kids playing soccer and that are older than them, that are 14, 15 years old, they're then go ask to go participate because they love the game. They don't care if they're going to get their butt handed to them or if they're just going to go out there and have fun with a bunch of younger players. It is when you start breaking it down to those numbers, and I think you're going to find out that when they're actually doing those things, that number is actually a much larger number. But those are few and far between players too.
Yeah, the one thing I always tell the story about with any, I'm currently going through it with one of my teams. I say it to them all the time. There is an MLS draft. Did you know there was an MLS draft?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've spoken to many a parent who are like, what do you mean there's an MLS draft? It runs like the NBA draft. It runs like the NFL draft. They pick the best college players. But a lot of teams aren't picking from that draft. They're going direct to, you take the FC Dallas Academy, for example, arguably one of the best academies in the US. They're picking players from a youth age group, not out of college. I think an 18-year-old made his debut the other night. He's still in high school. There's that young lad who plays over at Inter Miami. He went to play with Lionel Messi on the Friday, scored a goal with Lionel Messi on Sunday afternoon and went back to school on Monday and had to tell all of his friends. So, like I said, our pro division camps cater for that 15-plus age group. They make sure that the kid is athletically sound. Our local sports psychologist that comes in and works with the kids teaches them all about time management, teaches them all about the mindset of a champion, if you will, or an athlete, which is very important. Understanding your own capabilities, understanding time blocking, understanding what is priority and what isn't. And that's something, again, like I stress to my kids when I coach, if you can't manage both soccer and school, that's going to be an issue for you later on in life, be it a full-time job, be it a full-time athlete, whatever it may be. And that's where I think a lot of people, we see a major drop-off after the age of 16 across all age groups, across all genders of the sport. Once you hit 16, how many tournaments do you go to where you're no longer accepted because you're the only team that's registered? Be it 16 boys or 16 girls, it's no longer, it's school takes over, and that's where our pro division steps in and goes, right guys, we're going to help you learn to time block, time management, help you become a better, not just a better athlete, but a better person as well.
I like that. I think there's so much focused on the player, not the other side of the game, the human side of the game, and I think that's critical to move on in the path of a player to actually understand. Now, you talked about this pro side. So who else are you affiliated with? So you mentioned Steven. I am going to butcher the name of the academy over in Europe. They're part of the Dallas Cup. They bring over a Dallas Cup team every year. I don't know if people... I know the name. I just can't pronunciate it.
Yeah, so it's the Steven Gerrard Academy.
Gerrard.
And obviously... For those of you who don't know, Steven Gerrard was one of the, in my opinion, being a very biased Liverpool supporter, he was one of the best players in the Premier League. And he's very hands-on with the academy. He likes to make an appearance there every now and again. But the whole idea of the Steven Gerrard Academy is they've got an affiliation with the John Moores University out of Liverpool. The players, they finish high school, they sign up with our Steven Gerrard Academy. They go over to the UK. They stay on Penny Lane. If you're a Beatles fan, they literally stay in housing on Penny Lane, and then they go to and from college each day. At the same time, they play for the college, John Moores University. Soccer over there is quite big as well in terms of colleges. And these colleges will have scouts come out. And as I mentioned, we've got, I think it's something Cables FC. I'll have to look it up, and I will send it to you after this. But the young lad... there plays for the first team. He's been signed on as a first team member, still goes to college at the John Moores University and balances his practices and training. His practices and his educational work quite well through the help of the guys at the Steven Gerrard Academy.
And you mentioned a school in Ohio. So what's the school in Ohio?
Yeah, Challenger Sports is now powered by Spire Academy. It's a sports high school that's specifically, they've got several coaches up there that do the similar thing. We send a player up there they stay to play. So they stay at the high school. It's a boarding school up there. Very nice part of the world in Ohio. They've got an indoor soccer facility. which is, you know, big 11v11 field. They've got an outdoor field. And the coaches there are for, I believe, Sean Lane is a gentleman out of the UK who actually was a technical advisor in Australia at the Football Federation Australia for a while. He's been a part of national team setups and stuff like that. He coaches the boys' side. We host our national ID combines up there, and we also hold our state of play camps up there.
Now, you're talking about these state of play camps. You've mentioned them several times now. Can you explain what a state of play camp is?
Yeah, so it's a residency. They go up on the Sunday night. They'll do a meeting or a briefing with all of the coaches there. They'll go through planning for the week. They'll be like, all right, this is what we're doing Monday. This is what we're doing Tuesday. This is what we're doing Wednesday. And then on Thursday afternoon, they obviously all go back to their places of residence. They would stay at the college or the college campus, or let's take Spire Academy, for example. Being a boarding school, they do have access to all of that. The kids are obviously well looked after. We have coaches on campus 24 hours a day that can help with any problems and stuff like that. Now, I never did a residency camp as a kid, but I've been told, I'm having stayed with host families here, their younger ones have gone off to the college camps and stuff like that. They've said they've had a great time. It's a great way to make friends. It's a great way to be in a college soccer environment. And again, I keep coming back to this, prepare them for that next level, whatever it may be.
That's cool. Starting from a young age, how often do you see kids coming from 5, 6 years old and going all the way through 15, 16 years old? Is it common to see that, or do you normally see they fizzle out and then you pick up another? This age group tends to come through the program more, or do you see consistency with it all?
So the whole thing recently, Challenger Sports went through sort of an evolution process where that we identified we didn't have really a pathway. It was, okay, well, we've got the tiny types, then we've got a camp, then we've got this, then we've got that. Now we've gone, right, let's complete the player pathway. So we've got our tiny types, our foundational skills camps, which cater for the 6 to 12, and that's very recreational. Then we've got our creative skills camps, which again, 6 to 14, again, focusing on a bit more of that. But it's really a choice between the foundational and creative skills camps. The only difference really being creative skills will focus on the skill, and the foundational skills will focus on the technique. Then you've got our pro camps from about 14 years of age onwards, that really, again, focus on taking players out of their comfort zone, putting them on a soccer field where they're with college level or very high level players. They're working with very high level coaches, and they're having to work their way through and be like, okay, where do I fit into this soccer pyramid? Am I a college level player? And typically at our camps, at these pro camps, they can get identified pretty quickly. In terms of whether or not we see players go all the way through, yes, we do. We've seen players go from tiny tykes to skit to camps to pro camps all the way through. Now, obviously, it's very rare. Typically, we do pick up a lot more kids as we go along. But like I said, there is a full player pathway there now. No matter what your ability is or what your level is, we do have that opportunity now to provide from the 2-year-old all the way up to the 18-year-old.
Gotcha. Now, we're going to start talking about one of your programs you have. It's my first interaction with it with my son, which is your camps. So what age groups do you guys have for camps, or is it all age groups is broken down differently?
Yeah, so typically it's 6 to 14 years of age. In the mornings, we run our Tiny Types program, 8 a.m. to 8:45 prior to the camp. That's for 3 to 5-year-olds. The camp that your son would have done would have been at the time 6 to 14, and that would have been what's called a foundational skills camp. Our foundational skills camp would have been purely technique-based. There would have been a lot of technical-based drills right at the start, followed up by progressing into games, and then ultimately our World Cup, which is, if you ask any child who goes to our camp, how good's the World Cup? He will tell you, I made a trophy, I made a flag, I did this, I did that. I was Australia, I had coach so-and-so. It really is a big part of our camps. Again, you asked how that's been broken down in terms of age groups. Typically, one coach to 14 to 16 kids throughout the week, like a team environment. Obviously, the younger they are, we try to make sure the group is smaller and smaller, potentially one to eight kids, safety reasons. We want to make sure our coaches get face-to-face time with each individual. So the big thing for me with that is, obviously, said right at the start, if we've got a group of 6 to 7 year olds and you've got a 7 year old who's absolutely walking around everyone like they're street cones, then we'll push them up into the 8 and 9 year olds. And it happens. If we've got a 9 year old who might need a bit more face-to-face time, a little bit more help, we'll drop them down an age group. That's not to say that that 9 year old, if we drop them down on the Monday and the 9 year old says, I actually really want to be up with my friends, our camps are an experience as well. It's not so much a learning experience, it's a personal experience. So we don't want that 9 year old being like, okay, yes, I need help, but I'm not allowed to be with my friends. I'm going to go home and tell my mom I want to stay home tomorrow. So we make sure that they understand, okay, the ultimate thing for me is I say to coaches who come over from the UK, we're not being coached, we're not being paid to coach soccer. We're being paid to change lives. And that's the best part about my job. I get an opportunity to take a 2 year old and turn them into a soccer player and have them know me for the rest of my life. My background, obviously, I was in Connecticut back in 2017, and I was coaching out there with Challenger Sports, staying with a host family, and that host family actually came to my wedding 2 years ago. So that's the impact we have on people as a coach. And like I said, our camps are an experience. So as a coach, my job is to provide the best experience possible, either through learning or through having fun. Our creative skills camps are the same thing. We try to create a Disney-like experience with our inflatable fields. There's nothing else like our creative skills camps. We have a DJ that comes out. He's playing music while the kids are all playing their games. It's supposed to be a party-like atmosphere. We've got a street soccer performer who comes out, shows them skills, encourages the kids, hey, go and now do these in your games. We're not just going to stand behind a cone doing them. I'm going to show you the skill for 5 minutes. Now the challenge is, can you do it yourself?
Right.
And then obviously with our pro camps, we keep coming back to, we're trying to set them up for all walks of life. But the biggest thing I try and get across is, if somebody needs extra help, we'll put them in an environment where they need extra help. If somebody needs to be challenged, we'll put you in an environment where you need to be challenged. Obviously, they're going to be tough conversations if we aren't successful, but we have to be prepared for those.
I think that's important because it's being pushed and being challenged, and doesn't matter going up or going down. I always find it funny when you go to camps and you see a player just smoking everyone on the field. And like, why aren't they in the next age group? And then you see them the next day in the next age group, and now they're being not doing well. And at the young ages, it does mess with the psyche and the mental side of the game. And it's a matter of how long do they leave them in those groups to be pushed around. But at the same time, how do you balance, make that the balancing act between the two? Because I think at the end of the day, if you're going to really push a player, they have to be out of their comfort zone. It's because it's the only way they'll learn. And being pushed around for a day in a camp, then the next day they're back to the normal selves of smoking everyone or smoking half the group, even though it's a different age group. I think that's important to hear that you guys are actually doing all that stuff, and the relationships you're building and the excitement of the camp. Heck, we still have a Henry Kane poster on our wall from 5 years ago, from when Landon went to the last Challenger camp he went to, and or 4 years ago, however long ago it was. And I kid you not, it is something he still talks about every now and then. I think it was Coach Hugo, challenged him to catch the ball in his shirt. And the problem was those shirts don't stretch much. And so you hear all the threading pop as he's trying to do it. And bet those are memories me as a father having with my son, watching him at camp. And I don't know how much he'll remember because he was 5 or 6 at the time. But he still has that Henry Kane poster, and he knows that it came from that camp on his wall. So, yeah, the small little details.
And if you know Coach Hugo, and he likes to wear skin tight shirts as well, and I hope he's listening, he would have ripped his shirt doing it as well.
But those are the things. Like, those are the memories I have watching the coaches trying to challenge these kids to do something different and new. And I think it's important. And I don't know if parents catch on to that type of stuff, because for Landon, that was a memory he had and something he still tries to do. Maybe not as much now, but it was for about a year. It was something he worked on, was catching the ball with his shirt, and he did it by the end of the week, but he couldn't do it in his Challenger shirt. He could do it in his normal t-shirts. But those are the memories that my son has, and as I asked him the other day about it. So it's not just some random memory he has, it's something that he does.
That's fantastic to hear. It's obviously a big part of my job is I don't get to hear all these experiences kids have, but when I do hear them, I think it's fantastic, because for all the good stuff we think we do, there's obviously one or two people we only ever hear about the not good stuff. So
right.
I appreciate that story very much.
And I think as a parent, having that memory for my son is important, because it allows him to enjoy the game. And I don't think that's done enough here in the States. And from the sounds of it, you're giving that opportunity for these players to enjoy the game like it should be enjoyed. And it's nice to hear. Yeah. Is there anything we've missed or anything that you want to bring up that we haven't talked about?
No, I think we're pretty good.
Okay, so we're going to move on to my favorite question, and I'll give you a little bit more detail before once I ask it, and then I'll edit part of that out. So, who has been the greatest influence on you as a player? And this could be anyone. It doesn't have to be an actual player. Just when you played the beautiful game, and who has been the greatest influence on you as a coach? If you need clarification, let me know.
As a player, it'd be Harry Kuehl. Harry Kuehl played for Australia. I actually had the pleasure of coaching on one of his camps way back when, and I actually met him, and he told me his philosophy behind playing, and the whole philosophy behind his camps was trying to be more attacking players, trying to have more flair in the final third. He said it was something that is going away from our game, something that's dying. You look at players like Fernando Torres, you look at players like Ruud van Nistelrooy, you look at players like Cristiano Ronaldo. They're most successful in that final third. And he said that was a big thing that was very popular back in when he played, but unfortunately it died out. And that helped me as a player go, okay, we have to do more in the final third. So even though I was a goalkeeper, whenever I got the chance to play on the field, I always wanted to be Harry Kuehl, dribble at a player. Now my left foot wasn't as good, but I still tried. And that was the big thing. He talked about final third and trying to score as many goals as you possibly could. As a coach, I didn't play the highest level in the world, but I was lucky enough to be coached by Peter Denyer, who played for Portsmouth way back when. Peter didn't coach at the highest level either, but the one thing Peter did that affected me was obviously he got to know me on a personal level. He didn't try and coach me. He didn't try and change who I was as a player. But what he did do was make me want to go out there and play for him. When he spoke, you listened. When he said jump, you said how high. And now I like to think that Peter's actually set me up in my own coaching philosophy with the way I play and the way I coach. Trying to get to know a player before teaching them how to play the game, I feel like it's a super important part of a philosophy. And the big part that I liked about being coached by Peter Denyer, like I said, if I was willing to break my leg for him in a game, I had no issue with it. And he'd never ask that of you. You just wanted to play for the guy because he was such a down-to-earth human being. He got to know you. He made sure that you were okay. Before you went on the field, do you understand what you're doing? you're having a good day today. Yeah. What'd you have for breakfast? It was never, hey, what position are you playing? Okay, when you get the ball, do this. It was trying to relax the player and focus on the mindset and really try and just let the player go out there and enjoy themselves.
Hello, everyone. I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. I know I slacked last week by not providing an episode, but I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode. What Ben shared and his philosophy with Challenger Sports and what they're trying to do throughout the country and here in DFW is amazing.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.